Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Chelsea Reitzma is a Dutch-American award-winning, genre-bending singer-songwriter, visual artist, and poet based in Malta full-time and in Nashville part-time, known for her clever and poetic lyrics that inspire. She began her journey into music after a series of injuries ended her professional dance career and left her in a wheelchair for over a year. This is when she discovered that she could write songs and began singing. It helped her fight depression and gave her hope. Chelsea released her debut album, Memento Mori, in November 2024, following the success of her 18 singles and her Blackwater 4-track EP. In Malta, her music videos have topped the video charts multiple times. She's also the 2020-24 MMI Awards winner for Album of the Year in Malta, the second place winner in the Unsigned Only Sync Your Song competition in 2019, a semi-finalist in the ISC in 2023 for her She-Man song, and won an Artist in Residency in Auvergne at the Valletta Cultural Agency for her Desolate Days music project in 2020. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Chelsea Reitzma. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Thank you so much and thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here. I am currently in Malta.
I've been to Malta. I remember I went on a cruise that went from Italy, and one of the stops we had was in Malta. It's a beautiful place.
Yes, yes, it's gorgeous. There's so much here to see.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think to yourself, okay, I want to be in this creative world, this music world, and how did that journey progress?
Actually, I did not think that I was ever going to be in the music industry. That came as a surprise. I was a visual artist and a professional dancer. I only came into music about 10 years ago because my professional dancing career ended. I ended up in a wheelchair because of some ankle injuries that are permanent. And I spent over a year in a wheelchair. I started singing songwriting from the wheelchair because I couldn't really do much of anything else. Even to sit at the easel to paint and draw was too physically painful for me. So yeah, that's how I started singing and songwriting.
Thank you for sharing. Are you healed now? You said it's permanent injury.
I'm in pain 24/7, to be honest. It will never completely heal or go away. It's a permanent condition. And it can't be fixed. I've been to lots of surgeons and nobody will be able to fix it. So I just have to learn to live with it and work around it, which I do quite well, actually. I am basically can live a normal life. But if I have to walk for very long or be on my feet for very long, I use crutches and I have to tape up with physical therapy tape. On stage, I can perform like a normal person. I just have to really tape up my feet and ankles a lot and be a bit careful because I love dancing. That used to be my career. So it's really hard, like especially if I'm having a good day and I feel pretty good ankle-wise, I can get to jumping and get a little bit crazy on stage. And then I have to like remind myself like, okay, just pull it back just a little bit so you don't hurt yourself.
So when you were in the wheelchair and you couldn't really do much, what was the thing to say to you, okay, well, let me try this?
I was just kind of on a journey of self-discovery, like, okay, what else can I do? Because I love the stage. I want to be back on the stage. I don't want to just be relegated to writing or doing my visual art. I really love the stage. And so I was kind of like contemplating, shall I try acting or shall I try singing? I was like, you know, I'd rather do singing and songwriting because of my poetry background. And I feel like I have something to say as an artist. So that's why I chose singing, songwriting. So I would still really have a voice. But it was quite a awkward adjustment for me, and very uncomfortable, because I was so used to being on stage and expressing myself in a very visceral way and not hearing my voice, you know, like dance expression is quite different. And even painting and drawing, I never vocalized myself very much, except when I was teaching. So to actually hear my voice and hear it so loudly on a microphone and to really fill the space with my voice was quite empowering. Yeah, all of it just gave me a lot of hope. It fueled a new passion. Like I'm actually more passionate and more excited about my music than I ever was my dancing. So I'm kind of happy that it happened this way.
Well, they say sometimes things happen for a reason, and obviously this is one of them. Now, how long did it take for you to get used to hearing your voice in that way, expressing your voice in that way? You said it was a little bit awkward and uncomfortable in the beginning. So what was that journey of transition? How long was that?
It actually took me a couple years, and I released a couple of singles in that time. Like, I started my journey into music around 2015, and I released my first single in 2016. And the first two singles, it was just really strange to hear my own voice, you know, recorded and being played. But I got used to it quite quickly. I would say by the time I started releasing my EP in 2017 and 18, I felt very comfortable with performing and felt comfortable with my voice. So probably about two to three years for me to really own it and really like feel as comfortable with my voice as I did with my dancing.
It's interesting, when I first heard my voice, you know, on the podcast or in that way, I was like, oh, is that how I sound? I didn't think I sounded like that. I actually thought I sounded beforehand completely different. So it was also surprising to me. How do you create a song?
So I have a bit of a process. I usually get most of my inspiration while I'm driving. So I'm usually like on my way somewhere, on a road trip or something, and I start recording my vocals on my phone while I'm driving. And then later I kind of start finalizing things. I find the melody that I really want. And then I usually work with a guitarist here, my co-writer, Alan De Gabriele. And we meet up and we just like start going through the song and laying down chords and stuff, because I don't play an instrument at a professional level other than my voice and maracas. I'm pretty good with maracas. That's basically how we go about it. And I kind of know the direction I want to take the song in. And I don't like to subscribe to a genre. I like each song to kind of tell me what it wants to be. In the sense, like, so I really feel it out during that process of laying down the chords. And I'm always thinking about what instrumentation I want, what direction I want to take it in stylistically before I send it to a producer. So usually my producer gets a very rough demo recorded in my garage, because I'm really lazy in regards to learning how to use Logic. I have it. And I have used Logic. I find it extremely tedious and frustrating. I usually send them a very rough demo, and I tell them the instrumentation I want, the style I want each song to be, and we go from there.
Not playing any instruments in a specific way. Obviously, you know how to sing and you use that as your instrument. Do you find it ever challenging to explain to the producer how you want to instrumentalize the song, not necessarily knowing how to play any of those instruments? Or has time taught you how to verbally say, okay, this is the way I'd like it to feel and sound?
At first, it was a challenge, but having a dance background, it really helped me to be able to verbalize that, because even with dancing, you really have to be able to pick out different instruments and the instrumentation that you kind of want to express with your dancing. I feel like I grasped that pretty quickly and was able to tell them pretty much what I wanted, you know, fairly quickly. now it's a very smooth process. Now that I have my team and my people I usually work with, and they're used to my process, I'm used to their process. And now I know more as well. So I can tell them, you know, like, I want to do this song, the D minor, you know, at 133 BPM. And, you know, these are my songs that I have. I would like to produce this song in a similar fashion and genre with similar instrumentation. So that really helps. Before I had larger repertoire of my own music, I had to send them links of other artists that I wanted the song to be similar to. Yeah, now it's just links to my own music, which is great.
You referenced earlier that the genre would come to you as you're in the creative process and you don't like to subscribe to a specific one. Having been started out in the industry, did you ever have anyone say to you, okay, you need to just do this, be in this lane, or just be in this genre? Or have you always just followed your own heart and path?
I've pretty much just followed my own heart and path, but I have had quite a number of people try to get me to pick a genre and stick to it, mostly for marketing purposes, because, you know, in a way it can make it easier to market yourself and to identify an audience. But I just find it too creatively as stifling to do that. Also, I believe nowadays a lot of artists that came before me have really opened up the market and just music culture and honed audiences that are receptive to artists that do multiple genres. And there's a lot of artists out there that do multiple genres. So I don't really feel that I have to do that. And so I usually just say thank you for your feedback, but I don't think we're going to be working together because I don't want to do a genre. You know, I want to do me.
I love that. I love that. That's a beautiful way of saying it. It's, I would to create me, not create in a box or create in a projected perspective of who or what I should be. What's coming up in the next period of time? What can you tell us? I know it's all secretive in your world, but what releases are happening? What events are happening? What can you tell us?
I actually have some pretty exciting stuff coming up. So in January, February, I am going out for the Grammys as a voting member for the first time. And I'm also going to the World Entertainment Awards. My Dark Times song off of the Memento Mori album was nominated for Best Alternative Song. So I'm really excited to go to those two events. It's my first time. They're back to back. So that's, I'm really looking forward to. And the other thing that is coming up is that about a year ago, I recorded in Nashville for the first time, which was an amazing experience. And I created an EP that I'm calling Home. And so in 2026 and 2027, I will be releasing the Home EP, as well as the live versions of my Memento Mori album and my Carpe Diem album.
Where is the World Entertainment Awards? Where do they take place?
In LA.
Brilliant. So we're going to be cheering you on in spirit, putting all that energy out there for the win. Now, you referenced that you're going to be releasing the Home EP. Why choosing to do an EP this time where previously you've released albums?
Because it just sort of happened that way. I had this group of songs that I was thinking it's perfect to record them in Nashville, also because a huge chunk of them I wrote in Nashville, and I was inspired by my experience touring in Nashville. So it just felt right to record them there and to keep them kind of like isolated, that it's like the Nashville songs. Like, that's how I feel about them. And a lot of my other songs are done in completely different styles. And I didn't really feel that the Nashville songs kind of mixed well with those. They just felt like a very separate body of work. In reality, I did not have enough finances to record a full album in Nashville because it's considerably more expensive than in Europe. So that was another issue.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the booklet, the unpacking, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm unsure if you are or not aware, there's a massive uptick of physical around the world. 2 years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyl sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. There needs to be a large number of exchanges daily for a product to be in the basket, and they monitor it for tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs have now been put back in the basket. And the research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily, in inverted commas, the older nostalgic people. We also have Spotify and these DSPs that people listen to music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I myself recorded CDs and vinyl both. And I actually have more requests for CDs and vinyl than I had originally anticipated. And I'm actually getting more and more requests all the time. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's really great. I wish I was still selling even more vinyl and CDs. Yeah, I'm still selling a decent chunk. And I sell quite a bit at live shows. And also, I've had quite a few people order. So I've shipped them all over the place.
Now, you referenced earlier about the performance and having to sort of keep, not control, but hold back a bit while performing and dancing, while performing live. What else do you love about performing live?
You know, I like connecting with my audience, with the fans. I just like that exchange of energy between the audience and the performers. I like the dialogue that happens between all the band members on stage, and just when everything's in sync and everyone's just really feeling the vibe, there's no other feeling like it. It's just energizing and emotional. And oftentimes I end up crying on stage or just getting super excited and happy, depending on what we're working on. But yeah, it's an incredible feeling. I think that is actually my favorite feeling, even more than jumping around.
Okay, so I'm that guy that is right up in front. I'm dancing, I'm jamming, I'm taking my cell phone out for one or two videos, one or two photos, and I put it away. I notice these days a lot of people are videoing and posting and tweeting or whatever they're doing for a lot of time during the show. From the perspective of you on the stage, and you reference connection and energy exchange and all those different elements, do you feel that the cell phone takes away from that a little bit, or it's just where society is at the moment?
I really feel that mobile phones do kind of kill the vibe a little bit, and they kind of put you in a different headspace that is not like in the now. You know, you're not enjoying the moment. You're not really fully there because you're thinking about what you're going to post on social media. It's different than when people used to use their phone just as a camera, or when people actually had cameras.
Yes.
And they would photograph to remember the moment later. And people still do that. Don't get me wrong. I know some people are not even social media people. They're just doing it to have the memory, which is great. But a lot of people are literally like live streaming while they're at the concert. So they're so worried about their live stream, looking who's watching their live stream. They're more worried about that than they are the actual concert that's happening. I feel like it can really be difficult for an artist to keep the attention and to connect with audiences that are just like so focused on their phones. Yeah, it's just not quite the same as when they're all focused on you and the band, you know?
Yeah. I saw the Corrs. The Corrs were here in Johannesburg, and sitting in front of me was a group of people that had flown from overseas to see them. A guy from Mexico, a lady from California, et cetera, et cetera. And I was watching the guy from Mexico, because he was sort of diagonally in front of me. He flew all this way to come see the Corrs. And I think for 85 to 90% of the time, he was watching them on his phone, filming. They were right in front of him in real life in 3D, but he was watching in 2D on his phone. I'm like, what are you doing? But I suppose everyone experiences things differently, and they just need to experience it the way that they want to, or the way that they enjoy, I suppose.
Yes, yes, for sure. And it's just so much part of our culture now, I guess, as well. And in another way, I really appreciate it, because when people are filming these clips and using their phone during a show, and then they post it later and tag me or they share it in their story, I really appreciate getting tagged in those posts. I appreciate them helping me spread the word of my music and getting it out there even more. It helps me as an artist. And it also helps me connect with different fans after the show and people that maybe I didn't get to physically meet that night. You know, we can connect on Instagram. And I really appreciate that aspect of it.
For you guys, it's another marketing tool to add to your marketing mix or your marketing strategy. And it's something that you don't have to action anything. It's just about them being there. And it's a pro and a plus of performing live.
Yeah, it's like it's the new word of mouth.
Oh, there we go. Thank you. I was looking for the correct term. You gave it to me. I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that, and I recognize that. There are millions of them. That's why I'm just saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be?
Asaf Avedon. He's my number one. Beth Hart. Love her. Her vibrato is just so, like, buttery. I'm always butchering their name, but I love them. King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I love them. Barnes Courtney. He's a newer artist from the LA area. He's brilliant. And Youngblood.
Chelsea, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
First off, thank you for supporting the arts and listening to these podcasts that support artists. And thank you for listening to my interview. Thank you for having me on. And please go and check out my music and connect with me on social media as well. Let me know what you think of my music. Yeah, just let's be friends.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook @CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.